Welcome to Bearing Light, a podcast of the Georgia Bulletin. On Bearing Light, we'll talk about all things Catholic in North and Central Georgia. We'll chat with the people featured in our news stories and others we meet along the way, with topics ranging from spirituality to service. New episodes will be available every other Monday. We hope you'll enjoy our conversations as a way to stay connected to your Catholic community. I'm Nicole Golden, editor of the Georgia Bulletin, news source of the Catholic Archdiocese of Atlanta. And joining me today is Andrew Nelson, reporter. Good afternoon. Good morning.
Hello. Hello. Very excited to be here at the inaugural episode of Bearing Light.
Yes, it's exciting. We're diving into the podcast world in addition to the other methods of news delivery we have. So it'll be a fun and we'll learn a lot too, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I think this can be a good way to reach people in their cars or while they're cooking dinner, wherever people listen to podcasts.
Absolutely. And I hope we can bring on, of course, clergy and religious, but ministry leaders, but also just regular folk from the pews, too.
Yeah. It'll be wonderful to share the voices of people that we interview. People that are featured in our newspaper, to have them share their story as with folks on the Bearing Light podcast and tell us a little bit about what makes them tick and their little faith journeys and how they're inspired by the gospel.
It's funny. I saw that Pope Leo had said yesterday about all the chatter in the world and all the voices, and sometimes we just need to stop and listen to how God wants us to move. So hopefully we can share, you know, how others hear God compelling them to move in different ways.
Yeah. So. Isn't that kind of the origin story of the unique name of our podcast?
Yeah. We had a couple of years ago when we celebrated the 60th anniversary of the Georgia Bulletin, the Archives Office of Atlanta, which I love our archivists there. They're history detectives, sort of. They uncovered some words of Archbishop Paul Hallinan that he wrote in the inaugural issue of that print edition, and I always thought it was beautiful. I'd love to share it. He wrote, "The religious press is not intended to be a house organ or a trade sheet. Its whole reason for being is that it might enter the community bearing light and courage, light enough to expose society's ills as well as its strengths. Courage enough to inspire justice and charity in those who might falter along the path." And so I think a lot's changed for us in how we deliver the news with podcasts and newsletters and our website and even social media, which is more your area of expertise. But I hope we keep that in mind, that concept of bearing light in this work.
Yeah, I that's a beautiful letter, and I've read it in years past, and I was always so impressed with the the faithfulness of it, but the confidence that by sharing information, by sharing stories, our communities can be inspired, make corrections. That's to me a very poetic view of what we can do with the news and the Catholic, especially from the Catholic perspective. So I would, if I may, suggest maybe we could share that in the story notes or the episode notes.
We should.
His original letter, so people can read it.
It
for
is.
Themselves.
It's beautiful. He did. It was very hopeful. I think he must have been a very forward-thinking archbishop. So. Mm-hmm. But let's introduce ourselves a little bit too, for people,
Excellent.
You pointed out, may see our bylines, but not
don't
either
too much
don't pay attention to the byline or don't know us. And, you've been here probably the longest of all of us on
yes,
staff.
Yes, I have taken to calling myself a legacy journalist or a legacy employee here at the Archdiocese of Atlanta. I started in June of, doing the math quickly in my head, 2007. So that would be 18 years and a few months.
That's amazing.
So that is amazing. You know, we're sort of when you start a job, perhaps you're like, oh, five-year plan. And then you're like, oh, five-year plan has come and gone very, very quickly.
The decade passed and then
exactly,
a few
exactly.
more.
It's been a wonderful treasure to be here for this long to...
Well, you had prior journalism experience, but how did you end up at the diocesan newspaper?
Yeah, well, we had moved to Atlanta, like many folks. We moved to Atlanta. We moved here in 06. So I had worked at two community newspapers prior to that, 3 years, 3.5 years in beautiful Vermont, and then 9 years, I think, in also equally beautiful Southern New Hampshire. So I was very familiar with New England Press. And then my new bride at the time, she took a job down in Atlanta. So we pulled up stakes and moved here. And I was reading the Georgia Bulletin. And then there was a help wanted ad in the paper. And in fact, one of my wife's colleagues, work colleagues.
Pointed it out?
Yeah, pointed it out to her. And so I applied. And we had covered a bunch of Catholic news at my paper up in New Hampshire. There was a merger of several. Time has erased exactly how many I can remember, but 5 or 6 Catholic churches in our city. And I had done a package of stories on them, examining each one, talking to parishioners, kind of what the vibe, what the characteristic, what the specialty of each of the parishes were. And up in New England, the parishes dated back to like the 1800s, and they were often started by immigrant groups moving in to work in the mill towns. So in my community in Nashua, New Hampshire, we had a Lithuanian parish, we had a Polish parish, we had a French-Canadian parish. We had an Irish parish. And so I had written about the stories about their mergers and from the diocese perspective, from the parishioner's perspective. And it was probably like a year, year and a half project. And once we left New Hampshire and we moved here, I had a folder of past clips and so forth.
Of course.
So I put them together, and fortunately, my editor, Marianne Castrano, liked what she saw, and she offered me the position. So it's been, like I said, 18 years going around the different parishes of the Archdiocese, which has been wonderful.
It was probably a very well-balanced piece and just sort of the opposite story of what's happened here in Atlanta. So I'm sure it was interesting to her. I too found my job through the classified ads in the Georgia Bulletin, so it looks like it works.
Yeah, right.
we both found our way here.
Yeah.
And she too brought me on here. So,
but what was your? How did you? What was your journalism journey? How did you?
I mean, I always, as a child, I always loved reading and writing, and would pull out the Sunday paper and open it up, spread it out on the floor, and read it, but decided to study broadcast journalism and did that. And toward the end of it, thought, I really should have studied print. That's really more my thing. But I did venture out into the professional world in radio news, and then did some public relations work, which is sort of the opposite of of journalism. But eventually found my way to work for a daily newspaper like you, small community newspaper. It's really a proving ground, and you do a lot of different jobs. You wear a lot of different hats and meet and a lot of different people. And just to hone that craft of storytelling, it's the best place to kind of start out.
Yeah. I love you talked about doing a little bit of everything.
Yes.
One of my fondest memories of starting out in journalism was it was a 6-day-a-week paper, and we had a rotation of dark room duties. So we would have to collect.
You're going to admit you remember the days of
dark
rooms.
Yes, I'm really dating myself because we shot on film.
I remember them too.
Yeah, we shot on film. So I'd collect all the spools of film. I'd run into the dark room and have to develop the film, and then run the film back out to the news desk. The editors would clip the photos that they wanted, then run back into the dark room to develop the film. Local newspapers are a gem. I love them.
They really are. There's nothing like them. You can cover a Board of Health meeting, but then do a wedding write-up and, you know, dealing with mothers of the bride. Yeah. Just all kinds of unique human experiences.
Oh, absolutely.
And then sharing those with readers and hoping they learn and something resonates with them as well.
Yeah.
So, we both are Catholic, and we probably have different stories of that. You are a cradle.
I am. That's Catholic. Right. That's right. I'm a cradle Catholic. I have baptized when my family lived in Arlington, Virginia. So I was born in Arlington and got baptized there. But one of my cradle Catholic stories has been because of my dad's work with the federal government, we lived overseas for many, many years, many, many years. And outside of our family home, I've always, like, the church was always home. It really fostered in me a sense of ownership of the church. Like, I've always felt that I could go into any Catholic church and feel like it was mine.
Wonderful.
I've never felt like, oh, I'm a stranger visiting. It's like I am a cousin who has been away for a long time, but I'm coming back to something that's familiar.
Familiar was the word.
Yeah, yeah. So whether when I was a kid, we would go to Mass sometimes in French, which I didn't speak a lick of French, but I always, like, I knew Mass. And growing up in the church, a deep familiarity, a deep sense of ownership, a deep sense of any church that I go to around the world, and I've been very fortunate to be able to travel, I've always felt like, oh, I'm a member of the family, just a little distant.
I have a place that I can go, sort of.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And you've lived in places where maybe Catholicism isn't very, you know, it's not common.
No. Yeah, very true, very true. The sense of when we lived in Egypt, we attended, Holy Family Church was the name of the church. And we would go on, because of the local culture, we would go to Mass on Saturdays. Our school week, I was in middle school at the time, our school week was Sunday through Thursday. Friday being the Muslim holy day, we had off from school. And then Saturday was the second weekday of the weekend. So we would go to Mass as a family Saturday nights. We'd never have coffee and donuts, but we'd always go home for dinner, obviously. But yeah, no, so that was always an appreciation of how important the faith was, that we would all gather in a place where the church was a small, very small minority of people. So it was wonderful. So I'm cradle Catholic, and
that's great that your parents were able to still foster that, even though living abroad, it couldn't have been always easy.
Not have been easy for them. And I remember this was the time, like, my parents, must have been my mom, I'll give my mom credit. She hung up a crucifix in my bedroom. And I remember a friend of mine who was not Catholic, he must have been maybe Protestant, I don't know, maybe. And he was like, oh my gosh, he saw the crucifix. And he's like, oh man, you guys are really religious, huh? And I was like, no, not really. It's just there. But anyways, tell me your story. How you joined the church?
I'm not a cradle. I entered the church as an adult, actually, through the RCIA program at Holy Trinity. Married a Catholic, and we had decided that we were going to raise our family in the Catholic Church. But it occurred to me as the children started coming along that I didn't necessarily know enough to be able to answer their questions, and so started really intended just to learn more, and that's why I went to RCIA, but found a lot of beautiful things that were true that I couldn't really turn away from, that I just kind of felt like I was taking things up a notch, really expanding what I already believed. I was raised in the United Methodist Church. My mother was very active. My grandmother and grandfather were too, and they're a small town Methodist church. My aunt ran a food pantry there. These were, people, my grandmother was a choir director. So they were people who really didn't just go to church on Sunday. The rest of the week, they were doing things. Their church was the center of life, and I wanted that. But then I found kind of a different way to do it. And I still say this today. There's something I learn every week that's new about being Catholic, and I love that.
Mm. So. Oh, yeah, crazy deep, rich history.
Deep, very rich. It's just an amazing journey. So, but I'm always a little envious of cradle Catholics. So I'll have to talk to a priest if that's a normal thing, but I always kind of wished. And then you can't regret, you know, kind of what your journey was to get here. But I have wonderful examples of what it meant to be Christian. And so I'm grateful for that.
How old were you? So you got married first and then you joined the church?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
The marriage was blessed by a Catholic priest, but I still hadn't made that leap. But as a baptized Christian, the marriage itself was blessed.
So how old were you and what do you remember? Do you remember the Easter Vigil?
Yes, I remember the Easter Vigil. I was expecting my second child in weeks away.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, so I do remember it. Yes.
I bet you do.
I do remember it. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. And the next day, it's very exciting. You're like, oh, gosh, I want to do everything. I want to, you know, just take it all on and wear it like a like a badge of honor. Yeah. So
no, the Easter Vigil
is an exciting time.
Oh, yeah. The Easter Vigil is a beautiful, beautiful mass, right? I mean, you have to sort of steel yourself for it because it's a little bit longer than usual.
It is.
But it is a gorgeous, gorgeous mass.
With the bonfire outside, and then it was beautiful. Beautiful. Holy Trinity did a great job with the preparation program. I'm sure they still do today, even though I think they're called most parishes are have transitioned to OCIA versus RCIA. Maybe we can talk about that someday here.
But it's an amazing program. I mean, tip of the hat, great respect to people who, as adults, make that decision.
Right. And a lot of times the sponsors are total strangers and they're willing to just swoop in and help you in your journey. And that I will never forget that I saw that in our own group of people entering the church that season. There were several sponsors who just volunteered their time to be there in case somebody didn't have a sponsor.
Did you have a sponsor?
No. She was a new friend to me and always grateful for that.
Yeah. Do you keep in touch with her? Or
no,
have you
I
ever
haven't.
Seen her?
That's terrible. But
No.
Always grateful.
Yeah, no,
always
absolutely.
Grateful.
I remember when I was in college, it must have been around that time, but my chaplain called me up and said, oh, so-and-so is entering the church. She doesn't have a sponsor. Would you be willing to sponsor her? And I was like, floored, of course. I mean, what a great honor. So I think we met maybe two or three times. A vague fog memory of history of going to the dining hall and like sitting down with her and chatting with her a couple times. I can't say I remember her name either, but I wish her well, obviously, and hope that God is still walking with her. Yeah, that would I'd say. You know, when you say cradle Catholic, but I think there's a point in one's life where as an adult, you have to make a decision, right?
Right.
As a cradle Catholic, I am so very grateful for my parents for bringing me up in the church. But at a certain time, one has to make it your own.
And don't you find sometimes it's an everyday thing? I mean, every day there's going to be things that aren't going well, but you have to decide, well, this is how I'm going to react or based on, who I am, what I believe. But it is very much an everyday thing, especially as you get older. You think it might get easier, but I think it doesn't.
No. And I remember one of the times back in college, I would say that college is when I made the faith mine. I had a wonderful chaplain. Shout out to Father Bob Sullivan. And one thing that I remember about him, he was a chaplain at State University of New York in Binghamton. In the Diocese of Syracuse.
Was he diocesan?
He was a diocesan. And we had a Newman Center. And I remember he was very much into the intellectual tradition, or he realized that we were at a college. He realized we were at a university, I should say. And so our job as students is to critically examine things not only literature, not only politics, but also the faith. So we always had a subscription to the more progressive National Catholic Reporter. We would have a subscription to the Wanderer newspaper, which is a very...
I was going to say, what's the Wanderer?
Yeah, I don't think it's around anymore, but it had been a very conservative, very orthodox newspaper. And the New York Times. So we really encourage everyone to pick up and read and examine. And I credit him, like, the sense that nothing was off limits, that everything was to be examined and to be taken as...
Smart.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was wonderful.
Very smart.
And
that's I always say, too, now, you know, I tell people in my own family, get your news from a variety of sources and then decide, you know, for your own self.
Right.
What the truth is.
Sure.
Based on all kinds of different sources.
Yeah.
So he was smart.
He was smart to do that. Yeah, very, very smart. That was a time when I really made it my own. And then also because it was a public university, we would have, he would have office hours, like university, and we would have daily mass in a kind of an office like we're sitting in now, around a bland tabletop, and it would just be him and me, and we would light a candle and we'd have mass. So I always have a fondness for not necessarily the smells and bells of the mass.
Well, it was a priest who really took time.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was wonderful.
Took his time.
Yeah,
and
if
he did that for you and with you, he probably did that with other students as well. And
yeah,
just so amazing.
Yeah, no, it was wonderful. Yeah, that was
very impactful.
Yeah, very much so.
So, being in the religious press, what surprises you about the work, maybe that you didn't expect?
Yeah, we've always had editors here at the Georgia Bulletin, of which I'm deeply grateful, who have always encouraged me to tell stories of people living the faith, people who have taken it upon themselves to move, to be motivated, to be inspired by the gospel stories, by Jesus' life. And that's always been a great surprise to me. Whether it's a nurse at St. Joseph's Hospital or somebody starting a choir of men who are homeless or people who collect relics, right? The people who have the variety of ways people live their life. I read this description of the religious press in another publication. The name is the publication escapes me right now, so I can take no credit with it. But the author was describing religious journalism as slant journalism, and she was not slant as in prejudicial, but rather takes the word slant from the poem by Emily Dickinson, "Tell all the truth, but tell it slant." And the opening line of the poem is, "Tell all the truth, but tell it slant," meaning if you just write about religious issues head on, you may lose people. But if you tell it slant, if you come at it from a different perspective, a different angle, it all of a sudden becomes illuminating.
Becomes real.
Exactly, yeah. And people want to read those stories because they're human stories. So that's kind of what always been inspired me about the religious press, writing for the Catholic newspaper, the Georgia Bulletin, the variety and richness of stories that we're able to tell. And hopefully our listeners will be able to experience for themselves through this podcast. How about you? How long have you been the editor now? I was thinking about that the other day.
The editor for, gosh, now my math skills are fading, for probably about, six years.
Yeah.
And then before that, reporter here. But yeah, in that dozen years, I still do a little bit of writing, although I wish I was doing more, but just had some amazing experiences that I might not have had working in secular media. Michael Alexander, our former coworker, talented photographer.
Outstanding.
He and I,
outstanding human being.
Oh, gosh, yes. Lord. What an inspiration. If I could only share all the things that he has done that people don't know about. But he and I went twice to the women's prison in Alto, the maximum security prison. I never expected to be you know, to be given a minute to a place like that to watch Mass being celebrated. Or he and I visited with refugee families in their apartments, trying to make a go of it here. They are of a different faith, but we help them because of who we are as right. Catholics. Also, another story Michael and I covered was the girl in the picture from the Vietnam War, seen fleeing
the napalm.
Napalm.
I think it's called Napalm Girl, maybe?
Right. She spoke at Marist School 1 year, and just her message of forgiveness. Those are stories I might not have had the opportunity. I know I wouldn't have had the opportunity otherwise to be part of. Those are ones that stick out to me. And what I think of, you know, we yes, our print edition goes to Catholic households, but our website and our social media, we have the potential to reach people who may have an idea of the Catholic Church, but really, if they have an opportunity to visit us, to read some of these stories, whether they're lukewarm Catholic or, like I said, somebody who has no experience with the Catholic Church at all, these are very valuable places to learn about what it really means to be Catholic. So. And hopefully we'll dive into some of that here.
Absolutely. On our podcast. It's exciting for the Bearing Light podcast that we're doing.
Thank you so much for introducing yourself.
Thank you. That's been wonderful. And I know the format, we're going to be trying some different things. So maybe sometimes it might be just your voice.
Right.
Or sometimes it might just be
you.
My voice. But
we might have a favorite or a best of or some regular segments that we'll introduce that'll be... you know, fun for listeners and for us.
So yeah, absolutely.
Thank you all, and stay tuned for future episodes of Bearing Light. Find episodes on the Georgia Bulletin website, YouTube, and your favorite podcast platforms every other Monday. Upcoming topics will be the season of Advent and a look back at the top stories of 2025. The print edition of the Georgia Bulletin is published biweekly, featuring news in English and Spanish. In between print issues, stay updated with our e-newsletters in both languages and by visiting our website, featuring news and commentary related to the Catholic Church. Find us on Facebook and Instagram. Learn more at georgiabulletin.org.